Angeles Times led to a number of attorneys general announcing a historic effort to investigate Exxon and other oil companies for misleading the public about climate change. And that does it for our broadcast. A very happy birthday to Igor Moreno. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, and Andre Lewis. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. Good morning. It's 7:59. The weather, mostly cloudy with a high near 44 today. Coming up on KBOO at 8 o'clock on More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste, they welcome community activist Cameron Whitten into the studio and take your calls. At 9 o'clock, the Old Mole Variety Hour hears from the National Lawyer Guild and their intent to deal with the Trump era. Plus, we'll check in with the chairman of the Yakima Tribal Council at a fundraiser for Standing Rock. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein discusses ways to ensure that all residents have access to Portland's extensive network of parks and natural areas. At 11 o'clock, Eat Fat and Get Thin on Health Watch. We'll talk with Dr. Mark Hyman about his new cookbook and debunking our culture's fat phobia. And at 11:30 on Radio Zine, they present Resistance and Resilience 50 years after the birth of the Black Panther Party. We take a look back at the lasting cultural legacy of the Panthers through the eyes of the generations that followed. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, please become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. It's 8 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Rocks with Standing Rock on Thursday, December 15th. At 8 p.m. at Dante's. This event will include native speakers, raffles, and live music by Spirit Lake, Miller & Sasser, Midlife Crisis, John Dutch, and more as a benefit for camps at Standing Rock. Again, that's Portland Rocks with Standing Rock on Thursday, December 15th at 8 p.m. at Dante's. Dante's is at 350 West Burnside Street in Portland. More information can be found on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud drop-off point for the Presents from Partners, Union's Labor of Love Toy Drive, to gather food and presents for their December Giving Party event. Presents from Partners helps unemployed parents throughout Greater Portland provide holiday joy to their children. Drop boxes are located all over Portland, including at KBOO Community Radio at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Deadline to donate is December 13th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Today is December 12th, 2016, and this is KBOO, Community Radio, here in Portland, Oregon. 90.7 on your FM dial, kboo.fm via the World Wide Web. If you're listening in Hood River or thereabouts, it's 91.9, and it's 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and Voices and Places South. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and I am so glad for you to join us this morning. Today is the 12th of December, and we hope that you will participate in our conversation this morning. We're waiting for some of our other people to join us this morning, but you are in the mix right now. So let me give you the phone number so that you may participate in this conversation. If you are calling on the phone, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We just finished hearing another not-so-surprising analysis of what is happening in our nation in the coming weeks as we in the presidency of Mr. Obama and begin the presidency of his successor. It's amazing for me, at least, just to see his appointees to the cabinet. And it's a very exciting and troubling time for those of us who are concerned about the fate of our nation. We see it, the troubling signs of what is happening just by looking at the appointees for prominent positions. So whether or not we are talking about the head of the State Department or defense or various other cabinet offices, we see that those who are being appointed more or less are there to dismantle, destroy, disrupt, whether it's in concerning environmental protection, consumer protection, whether it's health and human services, whether it is things that we might do to those who are most in want of survival. We see all these things that are so troubling. And it is a maybe troubling time for many of us. But, you know, it's times like this that we must gather and put things together. So joining us to help us sort out some of this is a man, and how are you, Cameron? Are you able to speak?
I can speak.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to see you here this morning. Those of you who might be familiar with what's happening in Portland, might be familiar with our guest this morning, Cameron Whitten, who is with Know Your City.
Yes.
Know Your City.
Indeed.
So tell us about
the
city.
Of course, I don't have to mime over the radio right now. I'm just recovering from a vocal cord surgery, but I've been speaking for about 3 days so far, but I have to use my indoor voice at all times.
An indoor voice, yeah.
And so I'm director of Know Your City. It's a local nonprofit that helps people understand this region, its history, and its culture. We do that through many different creative, community-based projects, including tours, youth programs, publications, and community forums. And we really, our work is centered on uplifting the voices of historically marginalized people, making sure that their voices are at the forefront, and we have a strict commitment to social justice.
Excellent. It is so exciting, I think, in many ways, what's happening in our city and in our nation this time. And part of the mission of Know Your City, as you say, is a commitment to social justice, but also community activism. How did you become involved in this organization, and what do you see as some of your goals for this coming year?
Yeah, I got involved in 2012. I had just committed a 55-day hunger strike outside of City Hall, if you heard of it, and afterwards felt like I was just figuring out what was next. I was in that period of a mid-20s crisis, and I got a call from the former director, the co-founder of Know Your City. At the time, it was still called Dill Pickle Club, and they were doing a Perfries tour about homelessness. And I was asked to speak on that tour, talk about my experience with the hunger strike, talk about my personal experience with homelessness when I was 18 years old here in the city of Portland. And I did that. And I remember going on that that walking tour. I think it was November 4th, 2012. And we had about two dozen people there outside of City Hall with us. And these were all people from the community. They weren't tourists. They were people who have lived here for, you know, whatever odd years, but we're all very concerned and wanted to learn more about what was happening with our housing crisis. Funny enough, 4 years later, we're still talking about the same things. But I had a good time, and I had opportunity to talk about something that was very important to me. And so from there, I became a member of the Dill Pickle Club, and after that, became a board member, then board president, and now executive director. So I've had a long history there.
So part of the thing that I understand of Know Your City is education, but from a different perspective. So as you mentioned, you know, your experiences and talking about homelessness in the city. So many of us or people might fly over the city or get the official view. I sense from you that part of your mission is to hear the other voices of the communities that make up the city, and so we get a better sense of who we are and better ways in which to connect with one another.
Yeah, there's a lot of narratives out there about who we are, our history, our stories, and I think that in these, you know, modern times, this present day, we're dealing with really complicated issues. And we're seeing that just because we are diversifying. We're more diverse than ever before, whether that's because of race, age, gender, sexuality, housing status. There's so many things that people are experiencing now that have not been experienced in any kind of way in the history of the United States of America. And our organization deeply, strongly believes that we have to put those voices at the forefront, those who are most directly impacted at the forefront, listen to their narratives, because if they cannot be listened to, if they cannot have the attention centered on their experiences, we will not be able to find the solutions that we need to address these present day problems.
Excellent. You're listening to KBOO in Portland. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with Cameron Witten, who is the executive director of Know Your City. Now, most recently, many of us have been aware of your media activism. Is that related to being ED of Know Your City, or how does those two things merge?
So something I've learned in my life is that things happen on accident. I just go with them. Mm-hmm. I remember it was election night. I went to a number of election night parties, and it's interesting to see from the beginning when the energy was really strong. When I was out at 8 p.m. when the Oregon results came out, I was actually at the Welcome Home Coalition party, and they were just having a blast celebrating the passage of the housing bond. And then, you know, afterwards, I ended up, you know, stopping by the Democratic Party of Oregon, which had a much more somber tone because it was pretty much called by that point in favor of Donald Trump winning the Electoral College. And afterwards, I was just biking through downtown, about to go to bed. And as I was biking past Chinatown, I hear all this screaming. And at first I say to myself, oh, that's probably just like the usual, you know, after late hours, Chinatown screaming. But then I started hearing Trump and F Trump and things like that. And I was like, no, this is actually something different. And I get to 6th and Burnside, and I find about 150 people there doing a die-in at the intersection. And there's like a truck, I mean, there's a TriMet bus that's trying to drive through, but they're kind of stalled. And I just went with it. For me, I was in denial after Electoral College voted for Donald Trump. Even though I saw the results, my body still, when I say President Trump, my body still does not recognize that as a real thing. Like, that's not a possibility. He is by far the most illegitimate person who ever has had that title next to his name. And I saw people and their reactions and their rage and their wanting to get involved, mostly young people. And it reminded me of 2011, Occupy Portland. That's the first time that I saw myself as an activist. And so it was a lot of nostalgia being there that night, and I stuck with it the entire night. They were marching until like 2:30 a.m., and I'm too old for that, but I stuck with it. They crossed highways. They almost got run over by cars. I was like, who are you foolish people? But we stuck with it, and I went out there every single day from Tuesday to Sunday, lost a lot of sleep, and I think it was the next day I just started filming. I got my phone out, went on Facebook Live, and it hit off. And since then, I've been documenting many different community events. I've had, you know, hundreds of thousands of people viewing and sharing this content. We've captured some really intense things like gun shootings and tear gas and mass arrests, all kinds of very intense things. But, know, that's the kind of stuff that you see the mainstream media always putting out there, the sensationalized incidents. But for me, we also got to have really amazing conversations. We got to document the peaceful organizing that was happening, and we got to build community. And so for me, that's something that I do not see the media currently fulfilling a role, except for great people like KBOO. But that's something that my live stream was able to do for people who could not physically be there at the protest. And so that, for me, has just been an incredible experience, and I'm continuing to do that to this day. I actually bought a plane ticket to go to D.C. for Inauguration Week. And it's just a great way to make sure that the Portland community can see what's happening here and, you know, in our capital.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. We're speaking this morning with Cameron Whitten, with Know Your City, media activist, journalist, fill in the blank. And
single.
Well, this isn't that type of show, Cameron, but, you know, we'll put it out there. Who knows? If you have some insight about what's been happening in this city around the events most recently, give us a call or some comment or conversation we'd like to have with Cameron. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're going to have a conversation about what's happening in this city. We can expand it a little bit more later in terms of police and police violence. But let's hear your thoughts. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Say, I got a question for your host, because it seemed like this guy is a contradiction. The reason I say that is that the people that he's talking about now are gentrifiers. They are the people that have came into Portland and gentrified the black community, took over and everything. And so when he talks about the housing crisis, well, the hipsters are part of the reason, as well as illegal immigrants. And when he talks about Donald Trump and all of that, then how do he square, and he might even be a gentrifier, gentrification that has been taking place in Northeast Portland. Take that off the air.
Okay, hold on. So we might have some conversation, Mike.
Oh,
yeah, Karen.
Mike left. Well, it was a question for Cecile, but I guess I'll take a stab at that. I think gentrification is real. I think displacement is real. I am black, in case Mike was wondering that. And part of my work with Know Your City has been learning and also teaching African-American history and seeing how Portland's black community was first forced to live in Vanport and how since then has been historically just pushed out of anything within the center city, and just seeing how most of that was done involuntarily. So it is very heartbreaking, and I think it is very real that we have to look at how much of this place has been changed politically because people of color have not been welcome here. And for me, it's been, one, I'll say I've been so happy to see so many people of color who were elected this electoral cycle here in Oregon. It's probably twice as diverse than it's ever been in history. But at the same time, we no longer have, you know, black chairs of Multnomah County. We don't have black city commissioners. We don't have a black police chief. We don't have a black editor-in-chief of the Oregonian. And I think a lot of these things that we used to have, including, you know, a black director of PPS, all these things that at one time we had, and we've not seen these things for decades, and a big part of that has been because of gentrification and displacement. But I have to say that cities across this country have people moving to them. It's something that's been a new phenomenon, that there's no longer this urban flight that we've dealt with for decades. And I think that our city, instead of acknowledging the fact that there are a lot of communities that were vulnerable to this moving in and finding ways to protect them and invest in them, they've done their continued cycle of disinvestment into these communities, which has led to massive displacement and gentrification. So while for me, I am so frustrated to see what's happened in this city, I've been here for over 7 years now, and I've completely seen Williams and Alberta and Mississippi change in that time. They already changed a lot before that, before I even got here when I was 18, but they've changed even more since then. And I do see this as a failure of public policy, and also see it as failure of the private sector. It's mostly failure of the private sector to do anything other than monetize off this community. But I think that the community, our city council, which has been talking about addressing housing issues for a while, has never done it in any kind of bold, innovative way, and have never done it in a way that's really put racial justice at the forefront. So it's things that I want to see changed. We're not going to see it changed yet because we still have an all-white city council. It's going to get, you know, whiter and slightly wealthier in the next year. But we have to make sure that people of color and people who are from this community are able to be elected. And we actually have somebody who was just elected, who's a lifelong Portlander, Chloe Udaly, and her campaign was on housing. So I think that this conversation, we'll be able to have a better conversation about gentrification displacement in the next year. But I'm still skeptical. There's still a lot of work to do. And I do not, of course, blame people who are out now protesting Donald Trump for that problem. I think even though some people who are down there are gentrifiers, some weren't. We got to be really honest about that. And those people who are out on the streets are more likely to be supportive of us making some radical changes than people who are not in the streets.
Yes, thank you. So talking about those people out on the streets, and you said it you know, when you the night of the election, it reminded you, you know, brought back memories of Occupy. And when was that? 2011. And what I found fascinating watching and viewing you on your live streaming is the different voices you were able to interview. Mm-hmm. So certainly I could go to the mainstream media and see, you know, people and police confrontation and reporter standing. What I found insightful is that your ability to move beyond that and to have conversation with people, mm-hmm. More than the talking heads or people you would normally see on mainstream news. Mm-hmm. Why was that important for you to allow those voices to be heard?
It was humanizing. And I think one thing that we saw in mainstream media, that we interviewed all these talking heads, and I myself and probably anybody who watched these things figured, oh, well, you know, there's no legitimate case for Donald Trump. Even all these conservative pundits, they sound so extreme. They sound like nobody would get behind them. And they were not representative of the demographic that voted for Donald Trump. And so after the election, I was really curious, like, how do I hear more about people who did vote for Donald Trump? And there's a lot of them here in Portland. I talked to all kinds of people. I talked to 18-year-olds. I talked to 6-year-old, you know, black men. I talked to strippers in Ankeny Alley, all these people who first voted for Bernie Sanders, then voted for Trump. So I've talked to a lot of people from a lot of different political persuasions and demographic backgrounds who voted for this person. And these are the voices that you're not going to hear on mainstream media. You're not going to hear from strippers on CNN. But these are the people who were the deciding factor in this election. And for me, if I'm going to continue to be involved in, you know, American politics for the rest of my life, I need to make sure that I know who these people are and what they think, because I do not want another dark orange presidency after 2016 is over. So we have to talk to these people, figure out where they are, why they felt that no other candidate spoke to them, and make sure that if we can't message to them, at least build relationships with them, because we can't let this happen again. And I, of course, am speechless. We're all figuring out how could this happen? How can we stop it from happening again? But I do not think being defeatist, and I do not think ignoring the problem is part of how we stop this from happening again. And I think that's what we did this year. We decided to ignore all of the groups and the messages that were super pro-Trump. We had to figure that they were all, you know, an extreme wing, a minority of opinion, but they were almost the majority. You know, Donald Trump didn't win the popular vote, but he won enough to be substantial. And we have to not ignore that threat anymore. White nationalism is on the rise. We have misogyny that's on the rise. I saw some great examples that, you know, and there's been lots of reports of hate crimes on the rise. And I've seen that personally. I remember one night I was out there marching past the library, and there were these three Trump bros, and they had signs on them that said, "Don't F me, F Trump." And there was this one white woman who was very emotional and very upset and yelling at them and said, "Do you see how this makes me feel unsafe?" And these terrible men looked at her and said, "I'm sorry, you're harassing me right now. I don't feel comfortable around you. You're really not making me feel safe." And that's what we're going to see more of. And we can't ignore that if we're going to stop this rise of bigotry and intolerance, because Donald Trump kind of gave a lot of people the green light. And it's going to be upon us as community members to be keeping spaces safe. And you can't just do it with a safety pin. You have to do it with being an active, vocal, and you have to be active and vocally in opposition to all these bigoted and racist and divisive views that people are now feeling more comfortable with revealing.
I think I'm hearing two things I want to explore with you. One was your insight that we, whoever we are, need to find out who they are. In having in-depth conversation, and somehow engage them. These are my words, respectfully to listen to their concerns. You mentioned people who people might not have thought would be natural voters for the Republican candidate, but did so anyway. So when we need to find ways to engage in conversation and find out what are people thinking, why are they? Why did they find that appealing? And then you're also speaking about organizing in opposition to what are the inevitable results of this mm-hmm. new presidency. Do you do those both at the same time?
You can totally do them at the same time. What happened in 2008 was that the Tea Party was created, and they have not gone away since that time. And what's happening right now is beautiful, seeing people protesting in the streets, finding ways to organize against Donald Trump. But the question is this going to last for 4 years? And the answer is that it has to. We can't look at this as just like a drop in the mud or a drop in time where you go out for Inauguration Day, get arrested, say how cool that was. President Obama faced opposition every step of the way. Whatever he did, he was always, in some people's eyes, a Kenyan Muslim socialist. Just terrible messaging, not truth whatsoever. But the great thing is that we have truth on our side, and we can do this for 4 years. We can push back against all of this misogyny, all of this very oppressive, very not cleaning of the swamp appointments that he's doing right now. So there's a lot that we can use to motivate our base and continue to resist Donald Trump for 4 years. And we have to commit to that. And so for me, it's not only how do we have good leadership, but how do we have commitment from this community who has shown up, protested in the streets, has, worn safety pins, has shared articles on their Facebook page saying how sad or angry they are. How can we get all the people to say that I commit to resisting for 4 years? That is going to be the most important thing that we can do right now, is commit to make sure that we will not let this person and his agenda win in the next 4 years.
You're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio. This is Cecil Prescott. We are speaking this morning with Cameron Whitten of Know Your City. Before we take our next call, let me remind you that coming up at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour here from the National Law Guild. Intends what they intend to do to deal with the Trump era. Plus, we'll check in with the chairman of the Yakima Tribal Council at a fundraiser for Standing Rock. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, news, headlines, and commentary. On 10:15, Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein discusses ways to ensure all residents have access to Portland's extensive networks of parks and natural areas. At 11, Eat Fat and Get Thin on Health Watch. We'll talk with Dr. Mark Hyman about his new cookbook and debunking our culture's fat phobia. At 11:30, Radio Zine presents Resistance and Resilience. 50 years after the birth of the Black Panther Party, we take a look back at the legacy, cultural legacy of the Black Panther Party and through the eyes of the generations that follow them. And thank you, all you who are KBOO members. Thank you for your support. And if you would like to be a supporting member, go to kboo.fm and click on donate. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're talking with Cameron Whitten. And We'll talk to Tom. Thank you for waiting, Tom.
Hey, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm 70 years old, and so I've been watching this whole process for quite a few years. And President Obama, he was elected twice, and he represents some of the most downtrodden of the downtrodden in our society, the people that are most taken advantage of, most, the least help, the most exploited. And when he was elected the first time, he had the House and the Senate and the presidency. The Democratic Party was in charge of everything. And they did absolutely nothing to help anybody in this country. And for the next 8 years, all they did was spend trillions of dollars on a war. They didn't do anything for the infrastructure of this country. They didn't do anything for the black people, the colored people, or the poor white people. And then they're really amazed that they don't get elected into office again. And the person that they had, that Clinton lady, she was just another in the line of screw the American people and buoy up the rich people and make them richer. And so, I mean, this country's in a mess, and it's because of the Democrats and the Republicans. You can't point the finger at one or the other. They have screwed this country up so bad and given everything to the rich and the powerful people and taken everything away from the American people, the working people, the infrastructure of this country. It's really sad. I mean, it's just horribly sad.
So Tom,
and nobody even seems to be want to talk about that.
So Tom, let me ask you from your, you know, years of experience and looking back, has there been another time in your lifetime that is similar, and what can we learn from history to counter that?
I unfortunately wasn't born during the FDR period, but that was probably the best period for this country and for the American people. And since then, they have torn it down. They have destroyed it. We are a third world country. If you can't see that, we are a third world country. If you want to go to a really progressive country, move to China. Those people are very progressive. This country is a damn joke.
Okay.
It's making the rich richer and making all of us slaves. We're living in a plantation country.
So let me ask you, Tom, do you have any hope?
Hell no, I don't have any hope.
Okay, well, thank
I'm not
you.
Stupid.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Let's
oh,
see.
Oh, that was a way to end it.
So that sentiment.
I am just offended. You cannot say that we live in a slave country, in a plantation country, because that is not historical. We can talk about communities of color who were enslaved, who were oppressed, even during FDR's time. That's just not historically accurate. Hillary Clinton was not my first choice for president at all. I did vote for her for the general election. I think people do have legitimate concerns about how she would have actually done made progress for economic justice. Even though I can agree that there are many ways that for the last 8 years, the Democratic Party and, you know, Democrats in leadership did not do enough for Americans, I already know that even though that they were not very effective in those 8 years, in the next 4 years, the Republican Party, now that it's in power, will be actively just taking away everything that's been worked on in the last 2 decades, all kinds of civil rights. We've already seen the Voting Rights Act get gutted. What's going to happen next for immigration and DACA, which Obama did with the executive order? That was a huge expansion of civil rights. That's going to be turned back. Roe v. Wade is under attack for real right now. It's something that Mike Pence has already been taking a lot of action in his own state as well. They're going to start having funerals for fetuses now. We're looking at other things. The environment, where there's now happening a witch hunt for employees within the Department of Energy. So we're seeing a list of things that are very concrete. So we can go ahead and say, oh, the Democrats weren't great, but we do know that the Republican Party is trying to dial back so much progress, which wasn't because of the Democratic Party. It was because of activists who've been doing work pushing the Democratic Party to make these policies in the first place. So all of the work that we could barely get done already is going to be rolled back because of Donald Trump and his new administration that's going to come into power. So I'm afraid for that, and we have to continue to push to preserve what we've already done so far, because it's all we got.
You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. We're speaking about our city, our country, our world. Is there hope? Where do we find inspiration? And how do we make changes in this new era? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and we're speaking with Cameron Witten. So how do you talk to someone like Tom, who is utterly frustrated and sees there is no hope? How do you listen to them, take their view in hand, and offer them a different way or suggestions in terms of organizing?
Well, Tom said that he was 70 years old. He's seen a lot in his time. And what I really hope for right now is that there can be intergenerational conversations, intergenerational mentorship, because I see most of the action happening right now is coming from younger people who have inherited this, did not choose this president at all. Millennials did not vote for Donald Trump, and they're stuck with this and the results of his policies, not even for the next 4 years, but Donald Trump's probably going to be appointing the majority of our Supreme Court. So we're going to deal with this for decades. And I see our younger people really being at the forefront of resisting Donald Trump. And so I expect people like Tom and other people his age to figure out their role in supporting these youth and providing mentorship and providing stability in their lives as they go out and put their bodies and lives on the line. So that's what I would do. I would call on people like Tom, who feel so frustrated, feel so hopeless, to come in to this circle and see that the hope is within our next generation, because they're the ones who are fired up. They saw the injustice, what happened during this electoral cycle, and they want to change it. They want to fix it. And so, yes, you can sit there and say you don't have hope in the elected officials who once again have not done by the will of the American people, but you should have hope in the people who want to continue to resist in the face of this injustice.
You suggested intergenerational conversations. Do you see that happening? Are there barriers that prevent people against speaking across generations?
Yeah, we're in a tough time, whether it's because of economic inequality. A lot of people feel defeated because they do not have, living wage jobs. We also live in a technological age where it's really hard to get out of our personal social bubbles.
Yes.
They trap us. And that's what I love about protests and demonstrations, because when you're out there in the streets, you get exposed to hundreds and thousands of people that you would never meet any other way. So I do see the protesting, going to community events as so integral to mobilizing and getting those connections together. So that's what I hope, is that not just that we continue to do the same things that we're doing, which is listening to the same media that we listen to and reading the same articles on Facebook that we used to. We have to go out there in the streets. We have to go to community events. We have to find a way to get out of our comfort zones and meet people that we would otherwise not meet.
Yeah, and I think I agree with most of what you said. And one thing I would ask you to explore more in terms of where the action is taking place. I would suggest that public demonstrations is just one arena where a lot of things are happening. And for people of different ability, public demonstrations may not be a possibility.
Well, when I say community events, I don't mean just public demonstrations. Mm-hmm. So that could be a forum. It could be a coat drive. It could be anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, you should be out there in the community in some manner.
Excellent. Yeah. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning. Gabe, good morning. Hello.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, hey, I was just calling in because I was driving home. I dropped off my son at preschool, and I'm driving home, and I heard Tom on the radio. And I got to say, I'm almost right there with him on everything except for the last part where he said he didn't have hope because he's not stupid. I thought it was funny, but I think we need to hold on to hope. But what inspired me to call was when Tom got off the line and Cameron mentioned that being a plantation country isn't historically accurate. And, I don't quite know exactly what Tom meant by it, but I'm guessing that probably he could have been talking about the or alluding to the prison industrial complex, where we do have more slaves in this country now than we did after the end of the Civil War. So just to point that out to Cameron, that I apologize that Tom offended you, but it's very possible that he could be referring to the real slaves in this country, which are in the millions now, and I think that just needs to be addressed. And then the second thing that I wanted to mention was that we're talking about the youth leading things. I happen to be work with youth at a Catholic church in Northeast, and youth from a bunch of the Catholic churches in Northeast, as well as from a bunch of the high schools in Northeast, have begun planning Martin Luther King rallying march, youth-led through Northeast Portland this year, which I'm really excited about. So I just want to let people know to stay tuned and keep your ear to the ground for that. There'll be more information coming out soon.
Hey Gabe, I'm taking off my hat now. I did get some communication from you about that, and I'll probably try to get in touch with you more about that.
Hey, that would be great. That would be great.
Thank you, Gabe.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I appreciate your time.
Great. So one of the things that Gabe just mentioned was in terms of youth organizing, and he's working with, like, high school students. What are some of your senses of what people younger than you are doing that excites you, Cameron?
I'm really loving the work that we see happening with PPS students. They have a group called Portland Public School Solidarity that's just started doing work, and they've been leading walkouts in response to the Donald Trump presidency. We're also seeing great groups like Momentum Alliance doing work with mostly youth of color, the fastest growing demographic in our city right now. So I think that we need to be seeing more of these spaces for youth to get involved and to be leaders. I'd say even Portland Resistance, a local group, these are people under 30 who are out there, doing civic action, civic leadership. So it's just amazing just to see people who are not, seen to be, the figureheads of policy in Portland, starting to speak up and show that we can't allow the same old white faces to continue to dominate the scene. So I think we need to see more of that. We're only a month out from election night, but I expect this next year to continue to see just a growing of unrest and people channeling that unrest into concrete leadership.
Excellent. Let's go to our next caller. And Bryant, thank you for waiting.
No, that's okay. Good morning. Cameron, I love what you're saying, but I'm 57, so I'm sort of on the end of the other guy who called, who was 70, and I need to say something. I might have said it other times on other shows, but we know how to do this society, in the sense that if we look at a model like Europe, or if we look at other models around the world that are not under U.S. backed dictatorships, there are ways of dealing with the ills of society. Unfortunately, we have come down in my lifetime, come down to the fact that we are completely living in fear of almost everything. Progressive people who want a society, just a civil society, are in fear all the time of being it's coming to the point we're gonna worry about being arrested, ousted from our jobs, et cetera, et cetera. The thing is since the 50s, I would say, or the 60s, we've known how to do this. But what we do is we keep taking everything away. And so we go out and protest and get our heads knocked in, or we lose our jobs because we don't go to work, et cetera, et cetera. And we keep watching all of our rights taken away. Now, I know, and I am a lifelong liberal. I'm an Abbie Hoffman liberal, okay? And you can't get much more liberal than that. But you know what? When Barack Obama walked into that office and did not close Guantanamo Bay and has not closed Guantanamo Bay, it was just a symbol of what he was not going to do his whole presidency. And this guy is a result of that. And I stopped mentioning his name like a year, almost 6 months ago. And I stopped laughing at him 6 months ago. He is not funny. He's not a jerk. He's not stupid. He's not as stupid as he acts. Okay? And he is going to finish ruining this country. But it goes down to the local level. Charlie Hales, look at our homeless camp on Burnside. Okay, those guys have been promised somewhere more permanent to stay for how many years? How bad are the roads in this city that have not been repaired, but multi-million-dollar developments people can't afford to live in are there? I mean, it just goes on and on. We have not held our leaders responsible, and sadly, our leaders don't feel any responsibility for us whatsoever. So,
okay.
I'm not going to keep this rant going.
Well, that's a good point to ask Cameron to share in terms of how do we hold our leaders accountable.
And you know what, Cecil, guys our age, us guys over 50, we know that this whole situation could be different, and it was actually progressing at one point. But I don't know if Cameron's age know that it was progressing and it was stopped. And we've actually allowed it to stop, you know. So I the solution I have is like, okay, stop protesting, stop working. And you know what? This sounds real hippie of me, and I'll tell you something, but it does work. Stop eating meat, stop eating pork. Okay.
Stop
going to these huge stores and stop $3,000 a month rent.
Okay, you made several points. I would like Cameron to respond
to. That's why people are.
Thank you, Brian. I think that there's a lot of things we do agree with. You know, I'm a vegetarian. I haven't eaten meat in almost a decade now, so I'm with you on that. I'm also with you on listening to people who are elders in the community and what they know of government. I do not, even though I've read the history books and I know through essays what it was like, it's really important to know the anecdotes, the real experiences of people. I do actually, what's stuck out to me about what you just said was Europe and how Europe has been so far ahead of us in terms of policy and not diving down to fear. But that's not what's happening right now. And we have to be very clear that this entire world right now is diving into fear. We're seeing the extreme radical right in Europe. You know, you saw the Brexit. Italy is now having their prime minister resign because of the right. In France, they're expecting the extreme right to win with their anti-immigrant policy. We're seeing anywhere that has had any kind of modicum of progress in the last couple of decades turn towards fear. So this is, I think Donald Trump is just a symptom of this global fear. And this is fear coming from mostly white people. We have to be very clear about what's happening right now. So for me, I do not feel like I can turn to Europe right now for inspiration. They're over there, you know, and I've met many Europeans in these last 2 years who have been like, oh, we feel so bad about Donald Trump. I'm like, I feel so bad about the stuff that you guys are doing.
Yeah.
We're seeing this happening everywhere. It is very scary. And we've got to be really honest about that. We do not have anybody that we can turn to right now other than our own communities. So that's why I'm hopeful to see what can happen here in Portland. I do think that Portland can be a beacon of light for the rest of the world. And we even saw last week where the city council voted for a taxation on overpaid CEOs, which is a small thing. It's going to bring in at least $2 million in revenue every year, more than that even possibly. But that's a big part of what we can start doing here locally and showing to the rest of the world that we are not for fear and division. We really are about having opportunities for people, and do not quit your job and do not stop protesting. I think that's especially for people like me who has had to experience homelessness at a very young age. I don't have the luxury of just saying, hey, I'm not going to work and I'm not going to protest. Those are things that I just can't do because I will die. But I do encourage people to find local solutions and really model what we want to see in this world, model what we want our president to do, model what we want other governments to do around this world. We got to do that by taking action here locally.
So action begins locally because in part that's where we can put our hands together and get some sort of response. And, you know, I want to apologize to our listeners because we wanted we advertised this program as primarily focusing on policing in Portland. We haven't even touched that yet.
Oops.
Or may not get there this morning, but I'm sure we'll have that continuing conversation. Let's go to our next caller first. Brian.
Harvey from Berkeley here.
Hey.
Hi, Cecil, and hi, Cameron. I find inspiration in the laws of physics. It's very simple. There's Newtonian physics, which is the study of the large, the atoms, molecules, tables and chairs, you and me. We're all separate. But then there's the law of quantum physics, which is the study of the smallest particles in the universe, photons and electrons. And according to according to quantum physics, there's something called quantum entanglement. And when you have two electrons or photons that are entangled with each other, and you separate them across the room or across the universe, they're still entangled. If you flip the polarity on an electron, the other electron across the universe will flip the other way instantaneously. And so, if the Big Bang theory is correct, that the universe sprang forth from a primordial atom, then we're all entangled. We live in an entangled universe, and we're all entangled on the quantum level. So that means that we are one, and that's the inspiration that I have, that I use to keep me entangled with everybody.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Harvey. So what inspires you that keeps you going on and keep you getting up in the morning?
Well, biology. My body wakes me up even when I don't want to sometimes. And I do think that it is just natural in so many ways. I have to surrender my own ego, my own worrying of what I'm perceiving, what's going to happen in me. And I'm allowing myself to go out into uncomfortable, unconventional settings and just allow myself to be open to what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing other people doing. And that to me is inspiration, because I know that I'm just a part of this community. I'm just a part of the solution of what we can do. But I am allowing other people to share their stories and allow them to change who I am for the better. And so that's just what I continue to see and continue to do. The fact that people that I've never met before are reaching out and saying, hey, I want to get involved. I want to help you. I can build websites. I can cook. I know how to cut hair. Here are these things that I now want to offer for this community. So even though this election did not turn out the way that I wanted it to, what I want beyond all things, even more than who I want to see as president, I'm seeing people who feel like they owe something to their community. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's a huge inspiration. And we have to continue to ask ourselves, what do we have that we can give up, that we can surrender to make this community better? And that's what I want to continue to see people doing. And I think that thanks to the dark orange agent that we now have as president, he's making people ask themselves how can they step up to the plate.
Certainly. Let's go to a next caller. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Cameron, how you doing, man? I worked with Cameron in diversity and veterans issues, and it's great to hear your voice today.
Oh, I know John. Hey, John.
Hey, now.
Long time no see.
First, I'd like to get a half a science credit for entanglement, if I could.
Okay.
Sure.
From the previous caller.
Okay.
Cameron, you do great work, and I wanted to know if you could share with folks. Now, it's kind of a perfect segue. You're asked for people that know how to do things, know how to organize, know how to protect people. What about our veterans, and what can we do as a minority group, really, to come forth and help everyone see how important it is that we take the streets, that we take the streets safely, that we work as a family out there?
Okay.
Thank you, John. One thing that I saw, a very powerful video that I saw coming from Standing Rock, was a group of veterans who went to apologize to the Sioux tribes for pretty much everything that America has done to indigenous people.
Right, and now they're on their way to Flint.
That's amazing. And I see that can happen here. I think that there is a lot of stuff that happened in Portland, both historically and happening now, and specifically speaking of direct action, one thing that I've seen is that Portland police has been very inconsistent in how they handle protests. And specifically, when we had student-led protests, the police were kind of like, we won't bash any heads, we won't use any tear gas. And I think if we could have some kind of march led by veterans talking about issues of peace and tolerance and healing, the police would feel very hesitant to act the way that I've seen them act in some ways. So I would love to see veteran groups who could stand with us and say, we want to do some kind of march talking about an issue important to us, because I'm sure that we could get at least 100 people in the streets supporting that. So I would, that's one idea that I have. And we would love just to see veterans coming together as a political voice, because they're very influential both for progressives and conservatives. And I think that's something that has been missing in terms of this political election. Even Donald Trump doesn't talk. He mostly fought with veterans. So it's been interesting to see that there's been no real veterans voice or real veterans conversation in this electoral cycle. So let's figure out what we need to do this next year to make sure that veterans are involved and helping us to craft solutions for people.
Thanks as always.
Thank you. And certainly, that voice has been missing. And there again is that sort of attempt where you're bringing communities together, where we can engage and listen and speak with one another. So veterans and students and young people and older people, finding common ground is so important, so important. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Aaron.
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much, Cecil, and thank you, Cameron, for what you do. I'll be brief. I know there's only a couple minutes left. I am a black male, too, moved to Portland from the South, and what I've been able to accomplish in the past several years is to earn some amount of economic freedom. And I know Cameron's not really discussing that. So the people that I mentor, the young men that I mentor, I teach them about educating themselves, creating a path to success, and basically finding a way to gain some economic freedom. I just had a couple of young men get accepted to law school. And I'm not saying that that's always the answer, but what I realize here as people of color, I think we need to discuss that a bit more. I know that's a bit off topic, but I'm realizing now, especially with this gentleman that we have, I call him a gentleman, the dude in the White House that's about to become president-elect. I feel that I'm emboldened now to talk more about that, because what I see is that it's going to come down to, especially with the rise of some of these people in Europe, and even someone mentioned it, you know, the rise of Fourth Reich sort of feeling. And I feel that. I honestly feel that. I feel also that if we as people of color have enough economic freedom to do certain things, to move and embolden and work within the economy, that we can give ourselves a bit more freedom. So even for me, I consider myself more of a subversive. I donate to organizations. I have the capital to do that. I find that there's a lot of power in that, as well as protesting. So I think we have to approach this more than just protesting. I think we have to also teach our young people that being economically strong and finding a way to empower themselves financially. I know that capitalism, but it's also something that it's a reality of what we live in this world right now.
Hey, thank you so much.
I'm cool with that.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Aaron. And Cameron, I really want to thank you for coming here today. And we did not talk about people interested in knowing more about Know Your City. What did they do? Facebook you? Or?
Yeah, we have a website, knowyourcity.org. We have Facebook, Twitter, KYC, PDX. We take donations in case you're looking for something, Aaron. please be engaged with that. I'm also involved with Portland's Resistance, also doing incredible work in the community. We don't just protest. That's something that folks should know. We are out there really building community. We're working on policy. We're supporting groups like Portland Tenants United, Common Cause. There's actually a rally coming up Wednesday from 8 to 9:30 a.m. outside of City Council in support of the open, accountable elections. So people are out there supporting voter-owned elections. That's super important to make sure that everyday people like you and me have a chance to be a city commissioner, to be a county commissioner, to be governor. If we're not able to find ways to level the playing field so that anybody can run for office and then win, we won't be able to see the diversity that we deserve in this democracy. And so I'm telling people to show up and support that. If you can, contact your city commissioners, because the ordinance that they're putting into place should go into place in 20 it's going in 2020. We should have voter elections ready for 2018. You know, we should get ready for that nearest electoral cycle to get really progressive, diverse candidates into city council.
It's been great for you coming here, Cameron, and sharing your thoughts. Continue progress in what you're doing. Take care of yourself. And maybe you won't be single forever.
Fingers crossed. Thank you, Cecile.
Okay. Thank you so much. You've been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. My name is Cecil Prescott. I hope you have a great day.
Good morning. This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:58. Coming up, the Old Mole Variety Hour. They will hear from National Lawyer Guild and their intent to deal with the Trump era. Plus, we'll check in with the chairman of the Yakima Tribal Council at a fundraiser for Standing Rock. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Seattle Theater Group. Presenting comedian Tig Notaro, performing at Revolution Hall on Friday, December 16th. Tickets are still available for her at 10:30 performance. And for more information for Tig Notaro on December 16th, can be found at revolutionhall.com. This is KBOO. It's 8:59.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Buyer and Seller, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from November 25th through December 17th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Buyer and Seller, the story of an underemployed Los Angeles actor who goes to work in Barbara Streisand's Malibu, California basement, allowing for delicious wit and commentary on the solitude of celebrity, the love-hate attraction between gay men and divas, and the melancholy that lurks beneath narcissism. Again, that's Buyer and Seller, November 25th through December 17th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information may be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, this is John Chuck, host of Progressive Spirit. Sue Monk Kidd has released the 20th anniversary edition of The Dance of the Dissident Daughter.
I wished more than anything I could go back to that, young 40-something-year-old woman and tell her it was going to be okay, you know, to press on.
Sue Monk Kidd, this week on Progressive Spirit. Listen to weekly podcasts on KBOO.fm/Progressive Spirit.